нашей большевистской партии приветствую и поздравляю вас. 24th
You are listening to the Book Club Commune. Hello and welcome back to the Book Club Commune with me, your host, Ivy Poese. After what has been a more than a year-long hiatus, finally we are returning and getting back into State and Revolution by Vladimir Lenin. This episode was recorded over a year ago in November of 2022, and I had an issue with getting more episodes recorded and this episode edited, but I am getting that all fixed now, and then new episodes of this shall be continuing on into March 2024, and we're just going to keep on going from there. So, without any much further ado than the year-long break, let's get back into the book.
Chapter 2. The State and Revolution, the Experience of 1848 to 51. Part 1. The Eve of the Revolution. The first works of mature Marxism, The Poverty of Philosophy, and The Communist Manifesto appeared on the eve of the Revolution of 1848. For this reason, in addition to presenting the general principles of Marxism, they reflect to a certain degree the concrete revolutionary situation of the time. Hence, it will be more expedient, perhaps, to examine what the authors of these works said about the state immediately before they drew conclusions from the experience of the years of 1848 to 51. In The Poverty of Philosophy, Marx wrote, quote, "The working class, in the course of its development, will substitute for the old civil society an association which will exclude classes and their antagonisms, and there will be no more political power properly so called, since political power is precisely the official expression of antagonism in class society, in civil society," end quote. It is instructive to compare this general statement of the idea of the state disappearing after the classes have been abolished with the statement contained in the Communist Manifesto, written by Marx and Engels a few months later, to be exact, in November 1847. Quote, "In depicting the most general phases of the development of the proletariat, we trace the more or less veiled civil war raging within existing society up to the point where that war breaks out into open revolution, and where the violent overthrow of the bourgeoisie lays the foundation for the sway of the proletariat. We have seen above that the first steps in the revolution by the working class is to raise the proletariat to the position of ruling class, to win the battle of democracy. The proletariat will use its political supremacy to wrest by degrees of all capital from the bourgeoisie, to centralize all instruments of production in the hands of the state, i.e. the proletariat organized as the ruling class, and to increase the total of productive forces as rapidly as possible," end quote. Here we have a formulation of one of the most remarkable and most important ideas of Marxism on the subject of the state, namely the idea of the dictatorship of the proletariat, as Marx and Engels began to call it after the Paris Commune. And also a very interesting definition of the state, which also belongs to the category of the forgotten words of Marxism, the state, i.e., the proletariat organized as the ruling class. This definition of the state has never been explained in the prevailing propaganda and agitation literature of the official social democratic parties. More than that, it has been forgotten, for it is absolutely irreconcilable with reformism, and is a slap in the face of the common opportunist prejudices and Philistine illusions about the peaceful development of democracy. The proletariat needs the state. This is repeated by all the opportunists, social chauvinists, and Kautskyites, who assure us that this is what Marx taught, but they forget to add that, in the first place, according to Marx, the proletariat needs only a state which is withering away, i.e. a state so constituted that it begins to wither away immediately and cannot but wither away. Secondly, the toilers need a state, i.e. the organized proletariat organized as the ruling class. The state as a special organization of forces. It is the organization of violence for the suppression of some class. What class must the proletariat suppress? Naturally, only the exploiting class, i.e. the bourgeoisie. The toilers need a state only to overcome the resistance of the exploiters, and only the proletariat can direct the suppression, carry it out, for the proletariat is the only class that is consistently revolutionary, the only class that can unite all the toilers and the exploited in the struggle against the bourgeoisie in completely displacing it. Eh. The exploiting classes need political rule in order to maintain exploitation, i.e., in the selfish interests of an insignificant minority against the interests of the vast majority of the people. The exploited classes need political rule in order to completely abolish all exploitation, i.e., the interests of the vast majority of the people, and against the interests of the insignificant minority consisting of the modern slave owners, the landlords, and the capitalists. The petty bourgeois democrats, those alleged socialists who substituted dreams of class harmony for the class struggle, and even pictured the socialist reformation in a dreamy fashion, not only in the form of the overthrow of the rule of the exploiting class, but in the form of the peaceful submission of the minority to the majority, which has become conscious of its aims. This petty bourgeois utopia, which is inseparably bound up with the idea of the state being above classes, led in practice to the betrayal of the interests of the toiling classes, as was shown, for example, by the history of the French revolutions of 1848 and 1871, and by the socialists joining bourgeois cabinets in England, France, Italy, and other countries at the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th centuries. Marx fought all his life against this petty bourgeois socialism, now resurrected in Russia by the socialist revolutionary and Menshevik parties. He logically pursued his doctrine of the class struggle to the doctrine of political power, the doctrine of the state. The overthrow of the bourgeois rule can be accomplished only by the proletariat, as the particular class whose economic conditions of existence train it for this task and provide it with the opportunity and the power to perform it. While the bourgeoisie breaks up and disintegrates the peasantry and all the petty bourgeois strata, it welds together, unites, and organizes the proletariat. Only the proletariat, by virtue of the economic role it plays in large-scale production, is capable of acting as the leader of all the toiling and exploited masses, whom the bourgeoisie exploits, oppresses, and crushes not less, and often more, than it does the proletarians, but who are incapable of waging an independent struggle for their emancipation. The doctrine of class struggle, as applied by Marx to the question of the state and of socialist revolution, leads inevitably to the recognition of the political rule of the proletariat, of its dictatorship, i.e., of power shared with none and relying directly upon the armed forces of the masses. The overthrow of the bourgeoisie can be achieved only by the proletariat becoming transformed into the ruling class, capable of crushing the inevitable and desperate resistance of the bourgeoisie and organizing all the toiling and exploited masses for the new economic order. The proletariat needs state power, the centralized organization of forces, the organization of violence, for the purpose of crushing the resistance of the exploiters and for the purpose of leading the great mass of the population, the peasantry, the petty bourgeoisie, and the semi-proletarians, in the work of organizing socialist economy. By educating the Workers' Party, Marxism educates the vanguard of the proletariat, which is capable of assuming power and of leading the whole people to socialism, of directing and organizing the new order, of being the teacher, guide, and leader of all the toiling and exploited in the task of building up their social life without the bourgeoisie and against the bourgeoisie. As against this, the now prevailing opportunism breeds in the ranks of the Workers' Party representatives of the better-paid workers who lose touch with the rank and file, get along fairly well under capitalism, and sell their birthright for a mess of pottage, i.e., renounce their role of revolutionary leaders of the people against the bourgeoisie. Marxist theory, the state, i.e. the proletarian organized as the ruling class, is inseparably bound up with all he taught on the revolutionary role of the proletariat in history. The culmination of this role is the proletarian dictatorship, the political rule of the proletariat. But if the proletariat needs a state as a special form of organization of violence against the bourgeoisie, the following deduction automatically arises. Is it conceivable that such an organization can be created without first abolishing, destroying the state machine created by the bourgeoisie for itself? The Communist Manifesto leads straight to this deduction, and it is of this deduction that Marx speaks when summing up the experience of the Revolution of 1848-51. Part 2. The Revolution Summed Up. Marx summed up the Revolution of 1848-51 in connection with the question of the state we are concerned with in the following passage in the 18th Brumaire of Louis Bonaparte. Quote, but the revolution is thoroughgoing. It is still in the process of passing through purgatory. It does its work methodically. By December 2, 1851, the day of Louis Bonaparte's coup d'etat, it had completed one half of its preparatory work. It is now completing the other half. First, it perfected the parliamentary power in order to overthrow it. Now it has attained this. It perfects the executive power, reduces it to its purest expression, isolates it, sets it up against itself as the sole target in order to concentrate all its forces of destruction against it. And when it has done this second half of its preliminary work, Europe will leap from her seat and exultantly exclaim, "Well grubbed, old mole." Okay. This executive power, with its monstrous bureaucracy and military organization, with its artificial state machinery, embracing a wide strata and with a host of officials numbering 500,000, besides an army of another 500,000, this appalling parasitic growth, which enmeshes the body of French society like a net and chokes all its pores, sprang up in the days of the absolute monarchy, with the decay of the feudal system, which it helped to hasten. The first French Revolution developed centralization, but at the same time it developed the extent, the attributes, and the agents of government authority. Napoleon perfected the state machinery. The legitimist monarchy and the July monarchy added nothing but a greater division of labor. The parliamentary republic, finally, in its struggle against the revolution, found itself compelled to strengthen, along with the repressive measures, the resources and centralization of governmental power. All the revolutions perfected this machine, instead of smashing it up. The parties that contended, in turn, for domination in regard to the possession of this huge state edifice as the principal spoils of the victor. End quote. In this remarkable passage, Marxism takes a tremendous step forward compared with the Communist Manifesto. In the latter, the question of the state is still treated in an extremely abstract manner, in the most general terms and expressions. In the above-quoted passage, the question is treated in a concrete manner, and the conclusion is most precise, definite, practical, and palpable. All the revolutions which have occurred up to now have helped to perfect the state machine, whereas it must be smashed, broken. This conclusion is the chief and fundamental thesis in the Marxian doctrine of the state. It is precisely this fundamental thesis which is not only completely forgotten by the predominant official social democratic parties, but most positively distorted, as we shall see later, by the foremost theoretician of the Second International, Karl Kautsky. The Communist Manifesto gives a general summary of his theory of history, which compels us to regard the state as an organ of class rule, and leads us to the inevitable conclusion that the proletariat cannot overthrow the bourgeoisie without first capturing political power, without attaining political supremacy, without transforming the state from the proletariat organized as a ruling class. It inevitably leads to the conclusion that this proletarian state will begin to wither away immediately after its victory, because the state is unnecessary and cannot exist in a society in which there are no class antagonisms. The question is to how, from the point of view of historical development, the substitution of the proletariat state for the bourgeois state is to take place is not raised. Marx raises this question and answers it in 1852. True to his philosophy of dialectical materialism, Marx takes as his basis the experience of the great years of revolution, 1848 to 51. Here, as everywhere, his teachings is the summary of experience, illuminated by profound philosophical conception of the world and a rich knowledge of history. The problem of the state is put concretely. How did the bourgeois state, the state machinery necessary for the rule of the bourgeoisie, come into being historically? What changes did it undergo? What evolution did it undergo in the course of the bourgeois revolutions, and in the face of the independent actions of the oppressed classes? What are the tasks of the proletariat in relation to this state machine? The centralized state power that is peculiar to bourgeois society came into being in the period of the fall of absolutism. Two institutions are most characteristic of this state machine, bureaucracy and a standing army. In their works, Marx and Engels repeatedly mentioned the thousand threads which connect these institutions with the bourgeoisies. The experience of every worker illustrates this connection in an extremely striking and impressive manner. From its own bitter experience, the working class learns to recognize this connection. That is why it learns so quickly and why it is so completely assimilates the doctrine which reveals this inevitable connection, the doctrine which the petty bourgeois democrats either ignorantly and lightheartedly deny, or still more lightheartedly admit in general, forgetting to draw the corresponding practical conclusions. The bureaucracy and the standing army are a parasite on the body of bourgeois society, a parasite created by the inherent antagonisms which rend that society, but a parasite which chokes all its pores of life. The Kautskyan opportunism, now prevalent in the official social democracy, considers the state, the view that the state is a parasitic growth to be peculiar and exclusively attributed to anarchism. Naturally, this distortion of Marxism is extremely useful to the Philistines, who have so utterly disgraced socialism by justifying and embellishing the imperialist war with the term national defense. But it is an absolute distortion nonetheless. The development, perfection, and strengthening of the bureaucratic and military apparatus proceeded during all the numerous bourgeois revolutions which Europe has witnessed since the fall of feudalism. It is precisely the petty bourgeoisie that is attracted to the side of the big bourgeoisie and is subordinate to it to a large extent by means of this apparatus, which provides the upper strata of the peasantry, small artisans, and tradesmen with a number of comparatively comfortable, quiet, respectable jobs, which raise their holders above the people. Consider what happened in Russia during the 6 months following March 12, 1917. The governmental posts, which hitherto had been given by preference to members of the Black Hundreds, now became the spoils of the cadets, Mensheviks, and social revolutionaries. Nobody really thought of introducing any serious reforms. Every effort was made to put them off until the Constituent Assembly was convened, and to put off the convocation of the Constituent Assembly until the end of the war. But there was no delay, no waiting for the Constituent Assembly in the matter of dividing the spoils, of getting the post of ministers, vice ministers, governors, generals, etc., etc. The game of combinations that was played in forming the government was, in essence, only the expression of this division and redivision of the spoils, which was going on high and low throughout the country, in every department of central and local government. The 6 months between March 12th and September 1917 can be summed up objectively, summed up beyond all dispute, as follows. Reforms shelved, distribution of political posts accomplished, and mistakes in the distribution corrected by a few redistributions. But the more bureaucratic apparatus is redistributed among the various bourgeois and petty bourgeois parties, among the cadets, social revolutionaries, and Mensheviks, if we take the case of Russia, the more clearly the oppressed classes with the proletariat at their head become conscious of their irreconcilability, hostile to the whole of bourgeois society. That is why it is necessary for all the bourgeois parties, even for the most democratic and revolutionary democratic parties, to increase their repressive measures against the revolutionary proletariat, to strengthen the apparatus of repression, i.e. the state machine that we are discussing. This course of events compels the revolution to concentrate all its forces of destruction against the state power, and to regard the problem not as one of perfecting the state machine, but one of smashing and destroying it. It was not logical reasoning, but the actual development of events, the living experience of 1848 to 51, that led to the problem being presented in this way. The extent to which Marx held strictly to the solid ground of historical experience can be seen from the fact that in 1852, he did not yet deal concretely with the question of what was to take the place of the state machine that was to be destroyed. Experience had not yet provided material for the solution of this problem, which history placed on the order of the day later on in 1871. In 1852, it was only possible to establish with the accuracy of scientific observation that the proletarian revolution had approached the task of concentrating all its forces of destruction against the state, of breaking the state machine. Here the question may arise, is it correct to generalize the experience, observations, and conclusions of Marx to apply them to a field that is wider than the history of France during the 3 years of 1848 to 51? Before proceeding to answer this question, we shall recall a remark made by Engels, and then we shall proceed to examine the facts. In his introduction to the third edition of the 18th Brumaire, Engels wrote, quote, "France is the land where, more than anywhere else, the historical class struggles were each time fought out to a decision, and where, consequentially, the changing political forms within which they occur and in which their results are summarized have likewise been stamped with the sharpest outlines, the center of feudalism in the Middle Ages, the model country of centralized monarchy, resting on estates since the Renaissance. France has demolished feudalism in the Great Revolution and established the unalloyed rule of the bourgeoisie in a classical purity unequaled by any other European land. And the struggle of the upward striving proletariat against the ruling bourgeoisie also appeared here in an acute form unknown elsewhere." End quote. The last sentence is out of date, inasmuch as a lull has occurred in the revolutionary struggle of the French proletariat since 1871. Although long as it may be, it does not preclude the possibility that in the coming proletarian revolution, France may once again reveal itself as the classic land of class struggle to a decision. Spoilers, not yet. Let us, however, cast a general glance over the history of the advanced countries at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th centuries. We shall see that the same process has been going on more slowly, in more varied forms, on a much wider field. On the one hand, the development of parliamentary power in the republican countries, France, America, Switzerland, as well as in the monarchies, England, Germany, and to an extent, Italy, the Scandinavian countries, etc. On the other hand, a struggle for power between the various bourgeois and petty bourgeois parties, which distribute and redistribute the spoils of office, while the foundations of bourgeois society remain unchanged. Finally, the perfection and consolidation of the executive power, its bureaucratic and military apparatus. There is not the slightest doubt that these features are common to the whole of the modern evolution of all capitalist states in general. In the years 1848 to 51, France displayed in a swift, sharp, concentrated form all the processes of development which are peculiar to the whole capitalist world. Imperialism, the era of bank capital, with the era of gigantic capitalist monopolies, the era of transformation of monopoly capitalism into state monopoly capitalism, has particularly witnessed an unprecedented strengthening of the state machine and an unprecedented growth of its bureaucratic and military apparatus in connection with the increase in repressive measures against the proletariat in the monarchical as well as the freest republican countries. World history is now undoubtedly leading towards the concentration of all the forces of the proletarian revolution on the destruction of the state machines of an incomparably larger scale than in 1852. What the proletariat will put in its place is indicated by the extremely instructive material provided by the Paris Commune. Part 3. The presentation of the question by Marx in 1852. In 1907, Mehring, in the magazine Neue Zeit, Neue Zeit, I think. I haven't studied German for a long time. Volume 25, page 164? Yes. Published extracts from a letter from Marx to Weidemeyer, dated March 5th, 1852. This letter, among other things, contained the following remarkable observation. Quote, "And now, as to myself, no credit is due to me for discovering the existence of classes in modern society, nor yet the struggle between them. Long before me, bourgeois historians had described the historical development of this class struggle, and bourgeois economists, the economic anatomy of the classes. What I did that was new was to prove, one, The existence of classes is only bound up with particular historical phases in the development of production. German words. Two, that the class struggle necessarily leads to the dictatorship of the proletariat. 3. This dictatorship itself only constitutes the transition to the abolition of all classes and to a classless society. End quote. In these words, Marx succeeded in expressing with striking clarity, first, the chief and radical difference between his doctrine and those of the most advanced and most profound thinkers of the bourgeoisie, and second, the essence of his doctrine of the state. It is often said and written that the core of Marxist theory is class struggle, but this is not true. And from this error very often springs the opportunist distortion of Marxism, its falsification, to make it accessible to the bourgeoisie. The theory of the class struggle was not created by Marx, but by the bourgeoisie before Marx, and generally speaking, it is acceptable to the bourgeoisie. Those who recognize only the class struggle are not yet Marxists. Those may be found have gone no further than the boundaries of bourgeois reasoning and bourgeois politics. To limit Marxism to the theory of class struggle means curtailing Marxism, distorting it, reducing it to something that is acceptable to the bourgeoisie. A Marxist who extends the acceptance of class struggle to the acceptance of the dictatorship of the proletariat, that is where the profound difference lies between a Marxist and ordinary, petty, and even big bourgeois. This is the touchstone on which the real understanding and acceptance of Marxism should be tested. It is not surprising that when the history of Europe brought the working class face to face with this question in a practical way, not only all the opportunists and reformists, but all the Kautskyites, those who vacillated between reformism and Marxism, proved to be miserable Philistines and petty bourgeois Democrats who repudiated the dictatorship of the proletariat. Kautsky's pamphlet, The Dictatorship of the Proletariat, published in August 1918, i.e., long after the first edition of the present pamphlet, is an example of the petty bourgeois distortion of Marxism and based renunciation of it in practice. While hypocritically recognizing in words, see my pamphlet, The Proletarian Revolution and the Renegade Kautsky, Petrograd and Moscow, 1918. Present-day opportunism in the person of its principal representative, the ex-Marxist Karl Kautsky, fits in completely with Marx's characterization of the bourgeois position, as quoted above, for this opportunism limits the field of recognition of the class struggle to the realm of the bourgeois relationships. Within this realm, within its framework, not a single educated liberal will refuse to recognize the class struggle in principle. Opportunism does not carry the recognition of class struggle to the main point, to the period of transition from capitalism to communism, to the period of the overthrow and complete abolition of the bourgeoisie. In reality, this period inevitably becomes a period of unusually violent class struggles in their sharpest possible forms, and therefore, during this period, the state must inevitably be a state that is democratic in a new way for the proletariat and the propertyless in general, and dictatorial in a new way against the bourgeoisie. To proceed, the essence of Marx's doctrine in the state is assimilated only by those who understand that the dictatorship of a single class is necessary not only for class society in general, not only for the proletariat, which has overthrown the bourgeoisie, but for the entire historical period between capitalism and class society, communism. The forms of the bourgeois state are extremely varied, but in essence, they are all the same. In one way or another, in the last analysis, all these states are inevitably the dictatorship of the bourgeoisie. Their transition from capitalism to communism will certainly create a great variety of abundance of political forms. But in essence, they will inevitably be only one, the dictatorship of the proletariat. End of chapter 2.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Book Club Commune. Next episode, we're going to continue on reading Lenin until we finish this book. These episodes are going to come out on a much more regular basis than they have for the last year and a bit. And you can look forward to new episodes of the Book Club Commune coming out on probably once a week, maybe once every 2 weeks. We'll see how it goes. I don't want to make promises that I don't know if I can keep quite yet, but we're definitely going to be way more regular with getting these episodes out and finishing up books and not recording an episode of a book and then leaving it for a year and a bit. That shouldn't happen again. But thank you all for sticking with me through this time. Hopefully, we can continue on and finish this and complete many or more books. And continue on and explore different books as well. Get away a bit from the traditional Lenin, Marx, Engels type shtick and look at some other books as well. But that's all I have for you this week. Solidarity forever and free Palestine. Субтитры сделал DimaTorzok